Welcome to Science Talk. I'm your host, Cynthia Sofranik. And let me just ask this question. How many of you are struggling with your weight or have struggled at some point in your life? Well, if your answer is yes, you certainly aren't alone. According to a survey from the Calorie Control Council, one-third of adult Americans, or 71 million people, are currently on a diet. But is all that dieting helping? Well, apparently not. The obesity numbers just keep growing. In the U.S. Surgeon General's report, published in December of 2002, 62% of Americans were overweight to obese, and close to 38% of those people, now that's almost 4 out of every 10 Americans, were obese. 300,000 deaths each year in the U.S. are linked to obesity. And here's one of the scariest statistics of all. 13% of children aged 6 to 11 years and 14% of adolescents aged 12 to 19 years were overweight in 1999. That number has nearly tripled for adolescents in the past two decades. Over the years, as the diseases of nutritional deficiency have diminished, they've been replaced by diseases of dietary excess and imbalance. These health problems now rank among the leading causes of illness and death in the U.S. They not only touch the lives of most Americans, but they're generating substantial health care costs as well. The total direct and indirect costs attributed to overweight and obesity came to $117 billion in the year 2000. The only good news is that the science community has finally turned its full attention to this rising obesity epidemic, and it's working hard to understand the physiology and psychology issues that are contributing to the fattening of America. Here to report on the latest scientific news on weight management, please welcome Dr. Jamie McManus, Chairman Medical Affairs and Health Sciences at Shackley, and Dr. Billy Martin, Director of Clinical Research. Welcome to both of you.
Hello, Cynthia.
How are you doing, Cynthia? Thank you very much.
Now, I'm afraid my opening sounded awfully grim.
Well, Cynthia, with good reason, I don't really blame you for feeling that way. The statistics are pretty frightening, and they seem to be changing in a very negative way so quickly. The implications of this rising rate of obesity truly are grim. The Surgeon General has said himself, health problems resulting from overweight and obesity could overturn many of the improvements achieved in the health of Americans in recent decades.
Obesity is at the top of the list when it comes to cause of death and illness in this country. If you're obese, you have a much higher risk of developing cardiovascular disease or suffering a stroke. You're also setting yourself up for an increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes, which in turn increases the risk of premature death from heart attack and stroke. Diabetes also multiplies the likelihood of below-the-knee amputations, blindness, and kidney failure.
Sadly, diabetes is now on the rise in most every country around the world. In fact, wherever American fast food restaurants are found, we're seeing an increase in obesity as well as a rising incidence of our Western diet-associated diseases.
Basically, we're eating foods that are highly refined, micronutrient-poor, and loaded with sugar and fat. And that's creating a 21st century paradox, a country of malnourished, obese people.
Well, it sounds like we're about at critical mass, and it's time to get very serious about making some changes. But I'm not sure dieting is the answer. First of all, most diets don't seem to work. And why is it when we diet and we lose weight, we almost always gain it back?
Sadly enough, Cynthia, people oftentimes gain back more than they originally lost. This is such an interesting phenomenon, and it's been the focus of a good deal of scientific research over the past few years. One of the most important things that has come out of our recent obesity and weight control research is the role muscle plays in metabolism.
Okay, muscles and metabolism. Tell us more, Dr. McManus.
Okay, let me just say, if you don't remember anything else from this science talk, I do want everyone to remember this. Muscle equals metabolism. And the more muscle you have in your body, the more calories you burn. It's as simple as that.
The minimal number of calories that you burn in the course of the day for essential body functions is what we call your BMR, or basal metabolic rate. Your BMR is largely determined by your muscle mass, and for every pound of muscle, you have the ability to burn up to 50 calories.
So, the more muscle you have, the higher your metabolism, and the more calories you'll burn in a day. Less muscle means a lower metabolism. When your metabolism drops, you burn fewer calories. Okay, we get that. But what does that have to do with the dreaded diet cycle, losing weight then gaining back more?
Well, Cynthia, that's where it really gets interesting. We've learned that when you go on a diet, your body triggers something called the famine response. In other words, when you're losing weight and not taking in the usual number of calories that you're used to burning, your body goes looking for energy wherever it can find it. And this includes the muscle.
So you just don't lose fat when you diet, you lose muscle too. And as you lose muscle, your metabolism decreases and you burn fewer calories.
And thus it is far easier to regain that lost weight. And the regained weight is unfortunately all fat.
So most dieters eventually gain the weight back, and they often gain more than they lost in the first place.
This can be particularly devastating for women trying to manage their weight. Women start out with a lower muscle mass. So loss of any lean muscle tissue, especially repeatedly over numbers of dieting cycle, can drastically reduce their metabolic rate so that it is so low that they need to reduce their calories into almost starvation levels in order to lose weight. I have treated or counseled women whose BMR, or basal metabolic rate, is as low as 1,100 calories per day. Now, since you must reduce your calorie intake by 500 calories per day in order to lose just 1 pound per week, that would mean that a woman with a BMR as low as 1,100 calories would have to be in a starvation mode of 600 calories per day in order to lose weight. And eating that few calories again triggers the signal in the body that says, hold on to fat.
Got it. So in some ways, diets are actually causing our collective weight problem and are especially troubling for women. How ironic. Diets are designed to help us lose weight, but because they contribute to diminished muscle mass and therefore reduced metabolism, the result is you can't maintain the weight loss. And so you regain the weight in the end. It's not only incredible, it's horrible.
Essentially, we've ignored the role that our muscle mass plays in metabolism, and the result has been devastating to our ability to manage weight.
And in addition to the metabolic consequences of this diet cycling, there are some pretty negative physical effects associated with the traditional diets as well. Most diets are too restrictive, they lack adequate amounts of essential vitamins and minerals, and they lead to feelings of low energy, deprivation, and hunger. Another great irony of this obesity epidemic is that we have people who are obese and yet malnourished at the same time. And all of these issues pose additional challenges to healthy and successful weight management.
I think most everyone listening can relate to those challenges. But let's get back to the whole muscle metabolism issue, because that sounds like the key here.
Yes, you're right, Cynthia. The key is to maintain muscle while you limit calorie intake and eat a balanced diet. I really want to emphasize the importance of balance, because that's where so many diets fail, especially the very high-protein, no-carb diets. Your body has been conditioned to thrive on protein, carbs, and fats. And restricting any one of these in today's world can be both physically and socially difficult.
You know, that's so right. And another problem with these high-protein, no-carbohydrate diets is that they're loaded with animal protein. And animal protein is high in cholesterol and saturated fat. And this is certainly not good for your heart or your health long-term.
Along with protein, we also need some heart-healthy, unsaturated fats for insulation. And fats make up important hormones. They also contribute to healthy skin and hair and help transport vitamins A, D, E, and K through your bloodstream.
Well, that's interesting, Dr. Martin. And in recent clinical studies at Harvard Medical School, subjects on a moderate fat diet lost an average of about 9 pounds, while the low fat dieters gained weight on average about 6 pounds, primarily because they couldn't stick with a program without a certain level of fat. Fat is much more satiating or satisfying than carbohydrates, and often actually less satiating than protein.
Okay, that's an interesting study. I mean, it's encouraging to know that a little fat is a good thing. Now, tell us about carbohydrates. Why are they important?
The primary job of carbohydrates is to supply the body with the energy it needs for basic functions.
And glucose, which is the simplest carbohydrate, is an essential fuel for the brain and for red blood cells. It's also the main source of energy for muscles during strenuous exercise.
Okay, so we definitely need carbohydrates. And now tell us more about the role protein plays.
Protein is essential to muscle building, and scientists suggest that one reason that high protein programs may promote significantly more short-term weight loss compared with lower protein diets is that protein promotes satiety. In other words, people are more satisfied eating a higher protein diet.
This brings us to another interesting topic, the effect of protein on thermogenesis. For those of you who don't know, thermogenesis, or the thermic effect of food, is the increase in energy expenditure after eating that food. It can be defined as the energy required for digestion, absorption, and metabolism of ingested nutrients.
So basically, when we compare the thermogenic effect of proteins to the thermogenic effect of fats or to carbohydrates, we're interested in determining which nutrients stoke the body's engine or metabolism more effectively.
Typically, the thermogenic effect of protein is 20 to 35% of energy consumed, while for carbohydrate, this number typically falls between 5 and 15%. The thermic effect of fat is still subject of debate.
The fact that protein has a higher thermogenic effect may also be another reason why these high-protein diets effectively power weight loss and decrease those feelings of hunger following a meal.
And since we're focusing on protein, I want to report some very interesting amino acid research. Recent work has focused specifically on the amino acid leucine, which is one of the three branched-chain amino acids. This particular amino acid plays a key role in the regulation of muscle protein synthesis, or muscle building. In fact, bodybuilders, who are obviously interested in building muscle, have found that including supplemental leucine in their protein blend is a very effective way to help gain and maintain muscle mass.
Leucine. So how does it work? Do we know?
Well, Cynthia, researchers have studied leucine's role in the preservation of lean tissue during weight loss for actually almost 30 years. And without getting too technical, emerging evidence has documented that supplementation with leucine enhances protein metabolism and may also play a critical role in glucose homeostasis. So these findings have led some to suggest that leucine supplementation may be beneficial during weight loss. In other words, helping with maintaining more steady glucose levels, but also in enhancing protein metabolism for muscle mass.
Leucine has been shown to stimulate protein synthesis and decrease the rate of protein breakdown, which is quite beneficial for sparing muscle tissue during weight loss.
There's actually been a good deal of leucine-related research conducted recently. Two studies in particular investigated the beneficial effects of increased dietary leucine intake during prolonged caloric restriction.
It was found that the groups consuming greater amounts of leucine consistently lost more body fat and retained a greater amount of lean tissue than the group taking less leucine.
And I believe there was a later publication where data was expressed as a ratio of fat loss to lean tissue loss. And in that 16-week investigation, subjects also took part in a defined exercise program.
And at the end of that study, the subjects who had consumed greater amounts of leucine lost more body weight, more body fat, and less lean mass than the group consuming less leucine. Together, these two investigations provide strong evidence that increased leucine intake during weight loss enhances the quality of weight loss by sparing lean muscle tissue.
So let me see if I have this right. There's an amino acid called leucine that not only stimulates protein synthesis, but apparently inhibits protein breakdown, which is all important for building and maintaining lean muscle mass.
And lean muscle mass is key to maintaining a healthy metabolism, which in turn helps you burn more calories.
Which helps you lose weight. That is just so interesting. So we need lean muscle mass to power our metabolism, and we need a balance of nutrients, but especially protein, plus an amino acid called leucine, to help us retain that muscle mass.
And just let me reiterate that a healthy diet that supports a healthy weight is a balanced diet. We need all the nutrients, proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. It's just the right kinds of proteins, fats, and carbohydrates, as well as the right amounts.
Okay, so let's talk about what we believe is the healthiest balance of macronutrients for weight loss.
About 40% of calories consumed should come from carbohydrates, the healthy types, like whole grains, beans, fresh fruits, and vegetables. Another 20 to 30% of calories should come from lean protein foods, such as soy, fish, and poultry. And of course, the rest, meaning the other 20 to 30%, should come from healthy types of fats, like those that are found in olives, nuts, avocados, and seeds.
And since we're talking about nutrients and healthy food choices, let's take a few minutes to discuss why it's important to consume carbohydrates that fall towards the lower end of the glycemic index to support weight management.
Okay, but first, remind us what the glycemic index is.
The glycemic index is a way to rank carbohydrate in a food based on how quickly it enters the bloodstream and elevates blood sugar. Quickly digested and metabolized carbohydrates have the highest glycemic indexes and raise blood sugar the most and the fastest.
Slowly digested carbohydrates have low glycemic indexes and release sugar into the bloodstream more gradually.
We're talking about specific foods. The more refined and highly processed carbohydrate-rich foods have a high glycemic index, so the blood sugar response is faster and higher than with less processed foods.
A review article in a 2002 issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association looked at 16 short-term studies relating glycemic index to hunger, satiety, and voluntary food intake, and they all showed some beneficial effects of low glycemic index meals compared to high glycemic meals. For example, in one study, obese children were given a high glycemic index meal or a low glycemic meal with identical calorie and fat and protein and carbohydrate content for breakfast and for lunch. Their voluntary food intake and energy consumption was monitored throughout the following afternoon. The energy intakes were 53% higher after the high glycemic index compared with the low glycemic index meals. In other words, they were hungrier after eating and consumed more calories after eating the higher glycemic index foods.
At about the same time, researchers evaluated whether a low glycemic diet versus a high glycemic diet could modify blood glucose and lipid metabolism, as well as total body fat in healthy but moderately overweight men. Surprisingly, this was the first study to show that replacing low glycemic carbohydrates for high glycemic carbohydrates could result in a decline in body fat and a small gain in lean body mass.
While most low glycemic foods pass through the digestive system more slowly than high glycemic foods, so the absorption of the nutrients is much more gradual and the glucose levels are maintained at a lower level so they don't peak so quickly.
Which is important because your body performs best when blood sugar is kept relatively constant. If your blood sugar drops too low, you experience increased hunger.
And if your blood sugar goes too high, your brain signals your pancreas to secrete more insulin. And insulin then brings your blood sugar back down, but primarily by converting the excess sugar to stored fat. So also, the greater the rate of increase in your blood sugar, the more chance that your body will release an excess amount of insulin that drives your blood sugar down too low and then makes you hungry again.
So for an effective weight loss plan, we need plenty of protein, but we also need carbohydrates that are low on the glycemic index.
Right. And we definitely need to cut back on the amount of refined sugar in our diets.
Absolutely, Dr. Martin. You know, a recent report from the USDA showed that sugar and sweetener consumption is at an all-time high of 142 pounds per person per year. Drinking just one 20-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola provides not only 250 calories, but 15 teaspoons of sugar. So it's large amounts of sugar or refined carbohydrates that are largely unhealthy, while the carbohydrates found in fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains are very healthy to consume.
So no refined carbs and watch the sugar. Good advice.
Absolutely, Cynthia. These high sugar diets really can lead to more fat storage, as well as feelings of hunger, which can quickly sabotage a weight loss program.
In fact, a study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition last month suggested that a single can of soda a day can add up to 15 pounds a year. Well, since we're talking about sugar and its effect on weight management, let me mention that many public health experts believe high fructose corn syrup consumption is a major contributor to the obesity crisis. Corn syrup flooded the American food supply in the early 1980s, and that's also when the nation's obesity rate started an unprecedented climb.
You know, I'm a firm believer in moderation in all things, and that is certainly true when it comes to the types and amounts of carbohydrates in our diets. It's really not just corn syrup that's bad. It is the amount that Americans tend to consume, especially through sodas and juice drinks, but also in sweets and other snack foods. Fructose itself is the naturally occurring sugar found in fruit. That's not bad, unless you consume excessive quantities, of course. Unfortunately, though, high fructose corn syrup is a sweeter version, and it is endemic in our food supply today.
Well, now we know what ingredients to stay away from. Besides leucine, are there other ingredients we should look for? Any special herbs, vitamins, or minerals that support a healthy weight management program?
Absolutely there are, Cynthia. Let's start with chromium, which plays a role in the metabolism of glucose. It also assists in the production of insulin and is necessary for energy production. It's a very important mineral in modulating blood sugar levels.
Chromium also plays a key role in the synthesis of cholesterol, fats, and proteins, and it may play a role in the preservation of lean muscle mass, so it's a valuable addition to a long-term weight loss program.
Magnesium is also important to carbohydrate metabolism. It may influence the release and activity of insulin, which is the hormone that helps control blood glucose levels.
And zinc also plays an important role in insulin production, storage, and secretion.
Banaba leaf has long been used as a folk medicine in the Philippines. One of its components, carisolic acid, is believed to play a role in glucose transport into cells.
Actually, in a cell model used to screen botanicals for their activity in glucose transport, an extract of banaba was shown to be one of the most active herbs tested. Carisolic acid isolated from the extract was shown to stimulate glucose uptake in the cell model.
You know, there are other herbs currently being investigated for their anti-obesity potential. For example, laboratory studies suggest that compounds found in Evodia, a plant used in traditional Chinese medicine, and those found in purple corn may actually have favorable effects on fat cell metabolism. Purple corn also contains proanthocyanidins, which are potent antioxidants. Now, more research is underway to determine their specific role in weight management.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing more about those ingredients in future science talks. Now, before we close, I want to discuss energy, especially low energy, because that's often a problem when we're trying to lose weight.
You're right. Low energy can lead to an increase in food cravings, snacking on unhealthy food choices like soda and candy, and more frequent trips to Starbucks for a quick pick-me-up.
Well, don't get us wrong. We do like our occasional cup of coffee just like everyone else. It definitely does give you a boost.
So do the new energy drinks that are on the market today.
Oh, yes, those drinks have become very popular. How is it that they boost energy?
One of the ingredients responsible for that energy boost is taurine. And although we don't know the precise mechanism of taurine's energy-boosting effects, we do know that it affects intracellular calcium homeostasis and calcium channels inside the muscle, including the heart. This leads to a more efficient influx and efflux of calcium into muscles, which results in a more efficient pumping action of the heart.
Clinical studies examining the effect of taurine, which is an amino acid, on physical and mental performance have been conducted, but most have only examined the effects of taurine combined with caffeine. Some studies suggest that the addition of taurine to an energy drink creates a synergistic effect with caffeine. In other words, they work together.
Well, that's interesting. Now, what about the claims I hear about green tea, how it boosts energy to help with weight loss? Is that true, and does it work because of the caffeine?
Well, not exactly, Cynthia. There's a compound in green tea called EGCG, which is epigallocatechin gallate, but you can just say EGCG. So EGCG is the likely responsible candidate for the weight loss-related claims that you've heard about. EGCG is one of four major catechins found in green tea. All catechins, including EGCG, are polyphenolic compounds, and they have remarkable antioxidant properties.
They're also an effective stimulator of thermogenesis, which we discussed briefly earlier.
By stimulating thermogenesis, EGCG contributes to your body's caloric output. So energy expenditure of the body is increased, so you burn more calories, and you can therefore lose more weight, more fat. It's all good.
So green tea with EGCG really does help burn calories. You know, we have learned a lot today. So much new information on why we gain weight and why diets don't work. But most importantly, thank you for sharing the news about solutions that do work. And I, for one, won't forget that when it comes to managing weight, muscles are essential, along with low-calorie, balanced meals with plenty of protein, good low-glycemic carbs, and a bit of healthy fat.
And of course, the final element to help you with long-term weight management is daily activity.
That's right. Exercise helps you burn more calories throughout the day and helps you build muscle mass, which burns even more calories.
And we can't forget about the other benefits of physical activity. It helps with flexibility and balance, it boosts energy and productivity, and it's really a great way to enhance emotional well-being, and it's my favorite activity to help reduce stress.
So it's time for all of us to rethink our eating habits and get up and get moving. Thank you, Dr. McManus and Dr. Martin, for sharing all the very latest scientific news on weight management with us today. For even more information on these important topics, go to www.shackley.com or talk to the person who gave you this edition of Hotline.